Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter number 1, text number 26. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Bhunjana Prapibham Khadam Balakam Sneha Yantrita Bhojayan Payayan Mudha Na Veda Agatam Antakam Bhunjana Prapibhan Khadam Balakam Sneha Yantritaha Bhojayan Payayan Mudho Na Vedagatam Antakam Bhunjana Prapibham Khadam Balakam Sneha Yantritaha Bhojayan Payayan Mudho Na Vedagatam Antakam Bhunjana Prapibham Khadam Balakam Sneha Yantritaha Bhojayan Payayan Mudho Na Vedagatam Antakam Bhunjana. While eating. Prapibham. While drinking. Khadam. While chewing. Balakam. Unto the child. Sneha. Yantritaha.
Being attached by affection.
Bhojayan. Feeding. Payayan.
Giving something to drink.
Mudha. The foolish man.
Not.
Veda.
Understood.
Agatam.
Had arrived.
Antakam.
Death.
Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Tridandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. When Ajamil chewed food and ate it, he called the child to chew and eat. And when he drank, he called the child to drink also. Always engaged in taking care of the child, in calling his name Narayan, Ajamil could not understand that his own time was now exhausted and that death was upon him. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is kind to the conditioned soul. Although this man completely forgot Narayan, he was calling his child saying, Narayan, please come eat this food. Narayan, please come drink this milk. Somehow or other, therefore, he was attached to the name Narayan. This is called Agyata Sukriti. Although calling for his son, he was unknowingly chanting the name of Narayan and the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is so transcendentally powerful that his chanting was being counted and recorded Om Agyanati Varandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama. Sometimes we think that our little deviations, our big deviations, are going unnoticed. Well, the devotees didn't see. But everything is being recorded. Prabhupada explained in Vrindavan. Yamaraj has a book and he's noting down every sinful activity that we do. It's all written down in Yamaraj's book. You can just imagine how big his database is. He's recording everyone's sinful activities. Every single thought, word, and deed is being noted by Yamaraj. And on the other hand, Krishna also has his book, Prabhupada says. Because we have what we call Krishna book, you see. But Krishna also has his book, the Krishna book. And he's noting down all the devotional activities that we're doing. As Prabhupada says, his chanting was being counted and recorded. So there's a record of everything that we've done since time immemorial. Everything is recorded. The good stuff, as they say, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It's all recorded. Every bit of it's recorded. So we can't really hide our nonsense. So we might as well just not, you might as well just give up being nonsense. I mean, that's, you know, since you can't hide it, might as well just give it up. You see, if we think we can get away with it, then we may continue being nonsense. You see, but we can't get away with it. We get a reaction, as you were bringing up the fifth canto last night. You see, we get a reaction for the nonsense that we do, and we get a blessing for all of the devotional activities we do, even if we're in a fallen condition like a Jamil, completely fallen condition. Just consider how fallen he was. Even though he was a very good Brahmin boy, you know, Pakka Brahmachari, you know, just because he happened to go gather firewood in the forest, and there in the forest he was shocked. There was a Shudra couple sexually, you know, lustfully, you know, really grooving on the bodily platform, you know, groveling in sense gratification. And he was shocked to see it. He knew this is very bad for me, Krishna. He was trying to protect himself. But somehow or other, it was too powerful. He must have just been a Brahmin and not a Vaishnava. You see? Fixed in the mode of goodness, but not solidly situated in the transcendental platform. And therefore, his whole Brahminical culture was lost. He had a chaste wife. He had sweet, kind, loving parents. He gave everything up. He actually brought this woman that he had seen there. He was feeling that just as he saw that Shudra enjoying this lusty woman, he also wanted to enjoy her in the same way. He had that desire just overpowered him. So he actually brought her into the house in a very clandestine way, that she will be our servant, and then gradually everything fell apart. His wife was gone, his parents kicked out, everything finished of his Brahminical, happy Brahminical life, and now he's become a slave of this prostitute. And he was having children after children, you know, child after child after child. He was doing all sorts of activities just to maintain this prostitute, robbing people, even murdering people, just to please this prostitute, her lusty desires. And even he became a very old man. He was still having children. Can you imagine a man in his 80s with a young baby? It's amazing he still had potency. Of course, in those days, a little different than now, but still, he was in his 80s, he had a little boy. He was so lusty. In Vedic culture, by the age of 50, you're supposed to give up that kind of, you know, grihastha activity of begetting children. By the age of 50, you're supposed to be totally retired from family life. But here he is in his 80s, and he's still having children. He's so attached to sex pleasure, you see. So anyway, the little child is always, there is always the most affection for the little one. You see, he's the most cute, He's the most in need of protection and help. So the little one always, in the family, the little one gets the most affection. So he's feeling so much affection for this little boy. He's so cute, this little Narayan. Somehow from his past qualification of mythical life, he has named the boy Narayan. That was his great good fortune. Actually, Prabhupada explains it probably in this chapter that this is the system in India. You see, of course, now they're, what are they doing? They're naming him after the movie stars. What a fall down for India. You know, this movie star. But formerly, they would name the children after Krishna. You see, they're great devotees of Krishna. So, and also, this is the program in ISKCON. In our society, you know, with Krishna Das and, you know, Chaitanya Dasi, and, you know, in this way, we give a name. Prabhupada gave, and our initiating gurus, we give these names according to the actual Vedic system, the name after Krishna or a great devotee or something related to the transcendental platform. And then Prabhupada, this is one of the most wonderful points that Prabhupada has ever made. He said, simply by remembering your name, you will go back to God. If you, at the time of your death, you can remember your own name, you will go back to God. So that's why, for no other reason, that's why everybody should get initiated. So you can meditate in your own name at the time of death and go back to Godhead. For no other reason, that's why everybody should get initiated. So, he is in this position that somehow his son, most fortunately, was named Narayan, and he's always saying, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Is he? Actually, he was calling out of his own family attachment, but he got the credit for calling the name of Narayan. And that saved him. Of course, the Yamadutas came. We all know the story. The Yamadutas came and said, okay, he's our man. We got the record on this fellow. He's really, really bad. He's definitely our man. You know, we got the whole case against him, and we're hauling him off now. And the Vishnudutas came and contested. No, he chanted the name of Narayan at the time of his passing away. You can't touch him. They were shocked. The Yamadutas were shocked. They had never been challenged before. They didn't know there was some other authority that even had the power to challenge them, you see. They were shocked. What? What do you mean? So in this way, this Ajamiya, he got an extension. He didn't, instead of leaving the body, he was able to stay in the body. And actually he went to Hardwar and took up seriously cultivating devotional service. Holy place, still a holy place in India. One can go to Hardwar. With the Ganges, maybe you've seen that Hardwar, the Ganges, they have a big bathing ghat there. The Ganges is flowing very, very powerfully at that point. And they have chains on the, you know, bolted to the cement so you can hold the chain and go out into the Ganga without being swept away and drowned. You gotta hold tight because Ganga is really powerful in Hardwar. So even, you know, thousands of years ago, this Hardwar was also being appreciated as a great holy place. So Ajamaya went there and got his purification and went back to Godhead, actually. So what's the lesson for us? We always have to see that. What's in it for me? This is not simply some dry philosophy. No, this is actually a practical program of how you can get out of your suffering condition and material existence, you see. It's actually, that's what this is all about. It's a way that we can get free from our entanglement in what? Three gunas, the three modes of material nature. Sattva-gun, Raja-gun, Tamagun. Right now we're being helplessly tossed in the waves of this material ocean. Sometimes we're drowning, sometimes we get a little breath of air to somehow keep going on, and again we're being drowned in the tossing of these waves, you see. So this is not really how it's supposed to be. After all, we are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. You see, we are His beloved children. We are not meant to be suffering in the prison of this material existence. He doesn't want us here. It's not that God is cruel and because we made a little mistake, now we're eternally damned. You see? This material nature is actually a safety net, just like the tightrope walkers, you see. When I was a young boy, I went to the circus, and there was a tightrope, you know, from across the auditorium. There was this tightrope, and so the tightrope walker, he goes on, he just walks across the tightrope. He does all kinds of tricks, you know, carries a chair, does all kinds of things out on the tightrope. But there's a net. We looked underneath. There was a net, so if he fell for any reason, then he's protected. You see. So this material nature is actually a net. We may think it's a horrible punishment sometimes, but actually this material nature is a safety net. That if somehow we fall from the spiritual world by a foolish envy of the Supreme Lord, as we discussed last night, the quality of envy, then there is a program to protect us from being completely ruined and finished. You see? And that is the material nature. It's a whole system, and even someone who had become so fallen as a Jamil, he was able to regain his original constitutional nature, Jivera Sarupa Hoy, Krishnara Nitya Das. So the material nature is actually a perfect arrangement of the Supreme Perfect Personality of Godhead to bring these perfect living entities who are presently in the cloud of imperfection back to the position of complete total perfection. The material nature is also perfect because it is an emanation of the Supreme Perfect. There's nothing wrong with the material nature. Nothing at all wrong with it. If you're an inmate in the prison, you may feel this is terribly wrong what's going on here. But if you're the warden of the prison, you know what's going on is proper. If you're a free citizen, when I was running a preaching center in Norman, Oklahoma, I used to go every Saturday to El Reno Federal Penitentiary. We had a program with the inmates. And I had to go through all these security checks, you know, in through one gate, another gate, finally I would be inside. It was a very tight security prison, a federal penitentiary. But for me, I saw, well, this is a nice opportunity to preach. I wasn't feeling imprisoned, even though I was behind bars with the inmates, you see. I didn't feel imprisoned there. I say, well, this is a program to help the inmates become rectified so they can become free citizens again. So, if we're in the prison, we may feel this is a horrible thing, but actually, once you become liberated from the influence of the modes of nature by taking seriously the process of Krishna consciousness, then you will see this material nature is actually a perfect arrangement. It's actually quite fantastic thing, the material nature. It's fantastic. Because it ultimately saves everyone. Prabhupada actually mentions, it's interesting to note, in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he says it is the destiny of every single living entity to go back home to Godhead. That means that sooner or later, every single jiva that has fallen into this quagmire of material existence will be liberated, will regain their swarup in the spiritual sky. So there's nothing to be afraid of this material energy if we utilize it in the service of Krishna. And that utilization is called the Sankirtan movement. The Sankirtan movement, we want to engage everything in the service of Krishna. Just like formerly this building was used for some mundane purpose. But now it's a beautiful temple, you see. Waking up here this morning was just like waking up in heaven. waking up, you know, going to sleep and waking up in the kingdom of God, you see. Because here everything is for Krishna. You see. And it's not that, you know, I'm missing out because I'm in a place where everything is for Krishna. Karmi will think, well, you know, I want to be a place where everything is for me. Why for someone else? You see? But the fact is, just as when you water the root of the tree, all the leaves and branches are nourished, when you feed your belly, then all the parts of your body are satisfied. The fact is, when we put Krishna in the center, Ishavashamidam sarvam yat kincha jagatam jagat tena chakchena bunjita magrida kashaspiddhanam, when we put Krishna back in the center, then what happens? It's fantastic what happens. It's incredibly enlivening what happens. We become ecstatic. We become blissful. We regain our original ecstatic nature. This suffering condition, this illusion condition, this agitated condition is completely unnatural. It has nothing to do with you, actually. Shishi Ganitai ki jai, Shishi Ladatamadar ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. It has nothing to do with you. The anxiety you go through, the illusion, the agitation, this has nothing actually to do with you, the living being. It's simply a cloud hanging over you, that's all. Cloud of my... It's a fog, a thick, heavy fog. When on our recent Around the World tour, we were preaching in New Govardhan in Australia, beautiful, beautiful place, in the mountains and the rivers. It's just a beautiful part of Australia. But in the morning, there was this thick fog came in the valley. You see. But as the sun rose, we saw gradually the fog was just dissipated, you see, by the bright sun. So right now we're in a thick, heavy fog, you see, especially in this Kali Yuga. That's when the fog gets most heavy and most thick. But by this brilliant sun of Srimad Bhagavatam, you see, this brilliant sun of Srimad Bhagavatam, it just burns away the fog. And in the beautiful, clear light of Krishna consciousness, emanating from the beautiful, supreme personality of Godhead, becomes manifest, visible to us. You see? That person who wears a peacock feather in his hair because he enjoys it. Last night, one lady, she said, she came to my room and said, I have one question. Why does Krishna wear the peacock feather? I just want to know why he wears a peacock feather. So I looked at her, and I saw she had this bracelet. I said, why do you wear that bracelet? Because you like it. You think it looks good, you feel good wearing it. So that is originally there in God, you see. That tendency to think, well, this looks really cool. I would like to wear this, you see. And then the cowboys go, wow, that really looks great. And the gopis go, oh. So Krishna, you see, he's the supreme dresser also. He does everything in perfect style, you see. Actually, Krishna sets what is actual fashion. That is said by Krishna. He doesn't follow any fashion, you know. He doesn't read the Gentleman's Quarterly magazine, figure out how he should dress. You see. People ask, well, why is Krishna blue? Well, Krishna, he finds the color blue to be a very cool color. He likes that color. He sports the coolest color. He can be whatever color he wants to be. Krishna wants to look cool, so the gopis will appreciate, so the cowherd boys will admire him. You see, so his devotees will be enlivened. So everything that Krishna does is perfect. Every thought, every word, every deed is supremely perfect. It's poetry in motion. Of course, for us, it's just, you know, it's academic at this time, but in Srila Prabhupada, we saw that quality also. how everything about Prabhupada is poetry in motion, is the saying in English, poetry in motion. Prabhupada, everything he did, the way he spoke, the way he gestured, you see, everything about Prabhupada is just, it's like a work of art. He was just, you know, it was a living piece of art. Yeah, or like Hayagrivapu in his book, The Hare Krishna Explosion, he says, like a faint Prabhupada just appeared in the midst of Manhattan like a famous actor out of a classic movie. Like the greatest classic movie that was ever filmed, and the most famous actor. And so Prabhupada appeared like that on Houston Street. So from Srila Prabhupada, we can understand something of Krishna, because he has the Shakti of Krishna, the potency of Krishna. So by taking advantage of this wonderful remembrance of Srila Prabhupada, this wonderful remembrance of Krishna by studying his pastimes and the details which are so wonderfully presented in the Nectar of Devotion, that book is a real gold mine of nectar, describing so many things about Krishna and his activities, and the way he would joke with Radharani. I mean, it's just incredible pastime. So I'm meditating on these leelas and keeping Krishna always in the center of our consciousness. The material nature will not be able to touch us. In India, they have that class called the untouchables. You see, we want to be untouchables also, untouchable by Maya. No, we want to be the untouchables, that Maya cannot touch us. That is the transcendental untouchables. There's this shield of Krishna bhakti. Just like our tilak is for that purpose, it's a shield. Nice sadhana in the morning, a good strong program, sadhana. Hearing, chanting, remembering, bowing down, cleansing the body, putting tilak. These activities actually give one a shield which protects one against the influence of the material nature, so that you can capture Krishna, actually. If we agree to become captured by Krishna, then the result is that we capture Krishna. So that's what we want in our Krishna Ganyas movement. That is the goal, to come to the point where we can actually capture Krishna. We do that by letting Krishna capture us, completely capture us, turn us into his eternal servants, that I'll do whatever you want, my Lord. I have nothing independent, no more independence now. From this moment forward, everything is for you. Whatever you want me to do, Krishna, just take me, I'm yours, you see. This complete submission to the will of the Lord will bring the result that Krishna will submit himself to you. Krishna is ajita. He is unconquerable. But he becomes jita, or conquered, by his devotee's love. There is that saying in English, love conquers all. That's a fact. Because love will conquer God. And when you conquer God, then you conquer all. It's a fact. Love does conquer all. Krishna consciousness. It's a fact. So our mission, our purpose, is simply to try to develop our love for Krishna. I was in Atlanta. Maybe you were there also in 75. Yes. Remember when Nirantara Prabhu had come in? You may remember this. He was a Sankirtan leader, book distribution. And, you know, it was always being emphasized that, you know, this is the greatest pleasure of Prabhupada. And it is a fact. But he was coming in like, Prabhupada, what pleases you the most? Because he was doing that service, and he wanted to, it looked, anyway, it appeared to me he was in the mood of thinking, I want to hear Prabhupada say that book distribution pleases me the most because I'm distributing books. That's the way it looked to me anyway. I don't know how you saw it, but that's how it appeared to me. He wanted to feel, yes, I'm a book distributor, and I'm giving the greatest pleasure to Prabhupada. That's the way it looked anyway. So there was a pause, and Prabhupada said, if you love Krishna. And devotees were just so enlivened, you know. Because Prabhupada, that looked like his pride, Prabhupada smashed his pride and established the ultimate goal of what everything we're doing is for, you see. Everything we're doing is for the purpose of developing love for Krishna. Otherwise, we could work for, you know, we could be selling Encyclopedia Britannica, you see. The purpose is we want to develop love for Krishna. That's the purpose of every single thing we're doing. So that means we should never do our service begrudgingly. That, oh, they asked me to wash the pots, or they asked me to, you know, some you know, a devotee likes certain things, he doesn't like other things because of our modes of nature. So whatever service we're asked to do by our authorities, by our spiritual master, our temple authorities, whatever service we're asked to do, we should do that. Even if we're not inclined to do that service, we should try to do it with love. That's the most important thing. Try to do everything with love. That I'm so fortunate, somehow or other, I've gotten the opportunity to be out here on the street approaching this person with this book. Or somehow I've gotten the opportunity to be here in the kitchen scrubbing this dirty pot, you see, or cleaning this toilet. Somehow or other, you know, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. After rotating in the cycle of birth and death for millions and millions of lifetimes, now I've gotten the opportunity to scrub the toilet in Krishna's temple. I'm the most fortunate living being in the entire universe because I've been gotten the opportunity to scrub this toilet, to be here on the street corner offering this book to this person who doesn't want to hear from me. You see? So we have to feel that I'm greatly fortunate. And if every single activity that we're doing for Krishna, liked or not liked, if we will try to do it sincerely in the most appreciative attitude that I had this opportunity, that will carry into every other activity that we're doing. Those things that we really like doing, like taking prasadam, for example, you know, we should try to, every time we take prasadam, we should think, let me do this in a mood of loving devotion. Not like a pig, you know, but really try to take it in a mood of devotion. Try to go deeply into this activity, of the worshipful activity of honoring Krishna Prasadam with deep bhakti, you see. And whatever we're doing, try to always do it with more bhakti, with more bhakti, with more bhakti. And that will carry over into all the other activities that we're doing. If I take prasadam with more bhakti, then I'll be able to clean the toilet also with more bhakti. You see? So whatever we're doing for Krishna, try to do it with more bhakti. Every day, we try to increase. A devotee is like a businessman. A businessman is not satisfied to be a millionaire. No. Once he gets his million, it is okay. Now I will become a billionaire. You see? Bill Gates is a billionaire. Is he stopped trying to make money? No way. He's trying to make more money, more money, more money. He wants Microsoft to control every aspect of our life. So they just never stop, these businessmen. They want more, 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 more. You know, there's a little side point. Prabhupada said, a Krishna-conscious businessman can aspire to become the wealthiest man in the whole world. So those of you, if you know any, if we're preaching to businessmen, we should encourage them. You know, you become the wealthiest businessman in the world, you see. And then, you know, then we can take over Germany. You can buy, the politicians can be bought, right? So you can buy out all the politicians. If you have enough money, you can buy the politicians of the world. Just by money alone, we can take over the world. If we have enough money, actually, we can control the world. So we have no objection if we have devotee businessmen who want to make more and more money. That's great. They just have to give at least 50% to ISKCON, that's all. The other half, they can spend as they like, but let them give 50% to ISKCON. Of course, if they're pure devotees, they'll give 100%. So anyway, the point I was making is that just as a businessman is always thinking more money, more money, more money, a devotee is just like a businessman. He's thinking more bhakti, more bhakti, more bhakti. How can I get more bhakti, more bhakti, more bhakti? You see? He's greedy. He never thinks, well, I have enough bhakti now. I'm not going to try to get any more. No. More bhakti, more bhakti. How can I get more bhakti? Greedy for bhakti. And how does that bhakti manifest? In the form of service. The more that we're enthusiastic to perform service, that means that we're getting bhakti. It's not something that we're sitting aloof. Yes, I have bhakti. No. The sign of bhakti means the enthusiasm to render whatever devotional service is necessary to push forward this movement. That's bhakti, you see. That is bhakti. So if we keep this bhakti spirit going in our heart, every day trying to get more and more bhakti, become more and more absorbed in devotional service, then the time of death, it will be very well noted in the book of Krishna. We'll have a very big resume on Krishna, on the Krishna book side, Krishna's book. And there won't be much information in Yamaraj's book. There'll be a lot of activity, and then, you know, it'll stop at a certain point when we join Krishna consciousness, you know. Sometimes they have a policy that you can actually get your criminal record expunged from the record. Sometimes that can be done in the material world. You can actually, the whole thing can be expunged. So, it's actually possible that we can, if we take up bhakti very, very seriously, all those things that were noted down in Yamaraj's book can be just cleared off the record. So there's no question of the Yamadutas ever visiting us. The Yamadutas are real, by the way. It's not just some, you know, mythological thing to scare us into being good little boys and girls. No, they're real. In fact, when Vishnupriya Mataji and I were preaching in Dallas many years ago, we were cultivating one very nice lady, but she became very, very sick. And she was in the hospital. And actually what happened was they gave her an injection. And that injection caused her tongue, she got an allergic reaction to that injection, and her tongue started swelling up like a balloon. And she was suffocating on her own tongue. It was blocking her air. So Vishnupriya was there screaming the holy names into her ear while I ran to get help from the nurses. And they came in with a big needle and they gave her something to counteract the first injection. They gave her a second injection to undo the result of the first injection. And then within several minutes, it actually was powerful. They knew, it was amazing. They had it available, and they injected it right away. And her tongue went down, and she was saved. But she told us that she had seen these horrible, grotesque creatures coming after her to grab her. In those moments when it looked like she may not make it, and she was suffocating on her tongue. So, of course, she went on to become a very nice devotee, became initiated, and went back to Godhead. But she had that very intense moment when she actually saw the Yamadutas. So they are real. They're definitely real. They're definitely real. And, of course, that's not our preaching method, you know. We want to scare people about the Yamadutas, so they... No, we present the supreme, all-attractive personality of Godhead. We don't have to follow the system of the Christians, you know, with hellfire and damnation, because we have something beautiful and wonderful to offer. We don't really need to emphasize the negative aspect, because Krishna is so attractive, he's so wonderful, he's so fantastic. All we really have to do is attract people with the beautiful holy names, the beautiful Prasadam, the wonderful association of devotees who are just like, you know, who are living saints on this planet, actually. So that's really all we have to do, is give the positive aspects. And it's that is sufficient. Not that out of fear of the Yamadutas. You know, we require, you know, become terrified with the Yamadutas. We want to scare everyone. So they'll you know, come in a state of fear and say, okay, I'll surrender. Just don't let me see the Yamadutas. We don't have to preach like that. Because this Krishna is so beautiful. That is all we need, is Krishna's beauty to attract us. So anyway, we can stop here and ask if there's any questions. Yes.
You said that everybody's going to go back to Godhead.
Yes, Prabhupada says in the next teachings of Lord Chaitanya, that is the destiny of every single living entity.
Krishna also fulfills everyone's desires. Don't they have to want to go back to Godhead?
Of course. They will remain here perpetually unless they actually... It is not that it's at some point, you know, the paddy wagon comes and rounds everyone up and drags them back to Goloka. You see? That day will come for every single jiva when their desire to go back will manifest. It will come out eventually in the vast span of eternity. Of course, there'll be new folks coming in take up their place. The penitentiary will not be closed. The El Reno penitentiary of this material world will remain open. Just some new inmates will come, fill up the prison, in and out. But eventually, every single jiva who falls in this material world eventually will get out, but only when they take shelter of Guru and Krishna. It's not that there's some other way to get out of here. No. One has to take shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. One has to give up sinful activities, agree, and desire to become Krishna conscious. Only then will the jiva get out. Otherwise, he will remain here eternally, suffering up and down through the samsara chakra, up and down. He will remain. That desire that I don't want to remain in the cycle of birth any longer, I want to go back to Krishna, that desire must become awakened. Otherwise, he will rot here perpetually. Questions more? Yeah?
In regard to that answer, it's also said that Lord Chaitanya, he didn't ask if someone is capable, fit for that or not fit. And there's this book about the marketplace of selling love of Godhead, and also there is the term of plundering the storehouse of love of Godhead, flooding the world, despite looking if people like it or not like it, or want it or not.
That's
want
right.
It. So how does this statement stands in relation to that? What you said?
Yes.
That people have.
Yes. When it says that, you know, that Lord Chaitanya has liberated everyone in the universe by his Nama Sankirtan movement, that doesn't mean that people were demoniac, holding on to a demoniac mentality, and they were forced to become God conscious against their will. What that means is that actually it's described, the Ashtra, that shloka in the 11th canto mentions the weapon. It says weapons, actually, plural. Weapons of Lord Chaitanya. That weapon is described by one of our acharyas as being his beauty. The point being here that Lord Chaitanya is so transcendentally attractive that who can resist being attracted to him? Because of that the beautiful features, the beautiful limbs of Gauranga, the beautiful name of Lord Chaitanya. The beauty of Lord Chaitanya is so powerful that even the most demoniac person's heart will melt and they will develop attraction for him. That's what it means. He's irresistibly beautiful. Even the jagais and madais of this world, especially when you add the mercy of Lord Nityananda to the recipe. You see? That mercy of Lord Nityananda. It's even more merciful than Gauranga himself. But no one is forced. Lord Chaitanya manifests so much mercy and so much beauty that no one can resist. No one can resist it. So in this way, everyone, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, everyone becomes the living. That's it. But not by force, by attraction. You see? Attraction. Questions more?
Question is why sometimes it is said nitya bada, mm-hmm. that we are eternally conditioned.
Yes. Souls. Yes. Yes. You are eternally conditioned. That's the thing. You know why? Because here's the spiritual world and here's the material world. Just like here in Germany, you used to have that, what was it called? Checkpoint Charlie at the Berlin Wall. You see. So that point. Where you cross between the spiritual world and the material world, at that point it is a state of pure timelessness. Something similar to the nirvana of the Buddhists. It is a point of pure timelessness. Therefore you cannot, that moment when you cross the border between the spiritual and material worlds, at that place there's no time clock. So you cannot trace out the moment when you enter the material world. It's impossible. You entered in a state of timelessness. Therefore, since you can't measure how long you've been here, it's impossible to measure how long you've been here. You have been here eternally. Actually. You have factually been here eternally in the cycle of birth and death. So you are indeed Nityabuddha. Because there's no way to measure the moment you entered the material world. It's immeasurable. You entered in timelessness. So you've always been here. Even though you were in the spiritual world, this is, you know, we can talk about these things, we can't really realize it until we re-enter the spiritual world, and then it'll all go, it all makes sense at that point. We have to take it on faith from our acharyas at this point. But it actually makes sense. And then, when you go back to Godhead, there's no past, present, or future there. So when you're actually there in the spiritual world, you were always there because there's no past. So when you go back to Godhead, you're eternally liberated. So you're either eternally liberated or eternally conditioned. You can choose which state you want to be in. You want to remain forever rotating in the cycle of birth and death, or you want to remain forever a member of Lord Sri Krishna's transcendental dancing party. Your choice. Lord Chaitanya is making it available by this Nama Sankirtan movement. If you will sing and dance in ecstatic love of God, then you will be allowed entrance into Lord Sri Krishna's eternal dancing party. You will give up your Nityabuddha baggage and you will be transported to that supreme, timeless realm of Goloka Vrindavan. Questions more? Are you ready? We're holding on to our rock, our pet rock. That's the problem. You know the example. There was a river, a wide river. And on one side, it's a beautiful paradise. The other side, it's a desolate desert. You see? And on the paradisal side, all the people are singing and dancing. They have beautiful silk and beautiful everything. Wonderful. You see? Sublime festivals going on, you see. And then other side, it's a horrible, desolate wasteland. There's a person over there, he's just skin and bones, reduced to practically nothing. And he's looking over there, going, "I wish I could be there." And they say, "Come on, come on, just swim across. It's swim across. You can make it, no problem." And he says, "But I have my rock here, my pet rock." Can't give it up. You see? How will I get my rock across? You don't need your rock. Just leave it. It's just a rock. But it's my pet rock. I've always... I didn't remember the pet rock. It was in the market. It was a big thing in the market. You could buy a pet rock. So I got my pet rock. I can't give it up. So thing, we have our pet rock. You know? What is that pet rock? I am this body. I'm a woman. I'm a man. You see? I'm German. I'm this, I'm that, I'm American. Pet rock. I have to give it up. Otherwise, we will not be able to enter that sublime paradise, Krishna Loka. Any other question? Yes.
You talked about that fog. What is
fog?
Fog was covering us, and then I heard that the only activity what the soul is doing is desiring.
You heard that the.
Yeah. That this is the only activity of the soul. So
the only activity of the soul
is desiring something. I want.
Is desiring
something?
Yeah,
something.
This.
Desiring something.
The soul's only activity is desiring.
Something, yes.
So I was wondering if the soul is also doing something else. I mean,
is the soul doing something? The soul. Well, there's two states of the soul, as we discussed moments ago. There, one state of the soul is called Nitya Buddha, and the other is called Nitya Siddha. There's a liberated position and a conditioned position. If one's desires are misplaced, then one becomes a factual prisoner of the material nature. You're not really doing anything. You're just being, just like in a factory, there's a conveyor belt that, you know, there's a manufacturer good. It just goes down the conveyor belt and they're just putting things on it. We're on the conveyor belt of the three modes of nature. Because we placed our desire, we misused our desire, now we become simply captive by this material nature and we're being carried along by the three modes. We're actually helplessly being dragged by the modes of nature. If we misplace our desire, trying to imitate God. You see? But if we take our desire and we utilize it properly, then we enter into a dimension where there's complete, total freedom and we can act unlimitedly. It's a fact in the material world, all you really have is desire. Everything else is being done by the modes. According to your desire, you're being dragged this way and dragged that way. But you are held accountable for everything that you do because of your desire, the modes are manipulating you in this way and that, and you have to take the reactions because your desire was wrong. But when your desire becomes purified, then you enter into that realm of complete total freedom and you can act unlimitedly. You can act in so many wonderful ways, exciting, dynamic adventures are there waiting for you. All you have to do is focus on purifying your desire, you see. Right now you have desire, you see. But right now your desire is to enjoy this material nature. I'm not saying only you, that's all of us. But since you asked the question, I'm using you as the example, you see. We all have the desire right now to enjoy this material nature, so that desire is killing you. It's keeping you in the cycle of birth and death. But if we purify that desire by associating with the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada, associating with the nice devotees here in Hare Krishna movement, you see, who are all trying to purify their desire. If we associate with persons who have purified desire or are trying to purify their desires, then our desire will also become purified. Instead of trying to desire to be the center of attraction, we will desire to make Krishna the center of attraction. And when our desire becomes purified in this way, then we can act unlimitedly. So you do that. Now you make your desire perfect. You have the power to control your desire. That power you always have. So now take that power that you have available totally. Your desire is totally under your power and control. Do you desire Maya or do you desire Krishna? So purify your desire, engage it in Krishna consciousness, and you will taste the sweetest happiness. I absolutely guarantee it. You will. You will relish nectar at every minute. Unlimited nectar at every minute will become your property. If you can simply purify your desire that I want nothing but Krishna from now on. Yes?
Sometimes it doesn't, not only sometimes, it doesn't feel like that we control the desire, because desire looks like something natural. I just desire.
Right. Your desires are being, yeah, that's on one level, we're seeing the modes of nature. I'm desiring this, I'm desiring that. That is because you have given power of attorney to the material nature. You sold out to the material nature. Therefore, you're being pulled around. I desire a boy, I desire money, I desire this, I desire that. You're being pulled by desires because of the root desire of wanting to be the enjoyer. You see? Because of the root desire of wanting to be the enjoyer, now you're being manipulated. So many desires are coming through your heart. I want this, I want that, I want this. All this lusty, angry, greedy desires are coming through under the influence of the modes because of the root desire of wanting to enjoy independently from God. That root desire, you have control over them. But if you utilize that, if you misapply if you that, you can either desire to serve Krishna or desire to try to be Krishna. You see, that desire you always have control over. But if you utilize that ability to desire either to be Krishna's servant or to be try to imitate Krishna, if you misuse that desire, then your heart becomes filled up with so many desires dictated by the modes of nature. You might even desire to kill somebody someday. People do it all the time. How many murders do we have every day here in Colombo? You see? People desire to murder someone because that desire was dictated by the modes of material nature because of the root desire of wanting to defy God, to enjoy independently from God. So the root desire you always have control over. At that point, at that level, you have control. You see, do you want to be Krishna conscious or do you want to try to be Krishna? As soon as you desire to try to be Krishna, then you lose control over all the desires that come. So one may say, well, what does one do if one is helplessly being carried by the stream of material desires? That's why, as I mentioned earlier in this class, Brahmanda Brahmite Konda Bhagavanji Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. After being carried by your desires to the higher planets, to the lower planets, you're just a slave of desire, you see. If somehow or other you come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master, by his mercy and by the mercy of Krishna, he plants the seed of bhakti in your heart, you see. And in that way you become fortunate, because then the original pure desire that you originally had before you misused it, that the seed of the desire to love God is planted in your heart. Now, if you realize that, wow, I've just gotten this seed planted in my heart. And this seed, if I allow it, if I let it grow and become a big plant, this will be my liberation. So if one will take advantage of the seed that's been planted in the heart by watering it and by making sure that no weeds choke it out, and by making sure that no mad elephants come in and go tromp, tromp, tromp and smash it. You see? Those three things. Then that seed within your heart will burst through the coverings of this material universe and you will enter into the sublime spiritual world. So, what is the water? Do you know what is the watering process? That is chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. You know what the weeds are? Illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling. You know what the mad elephant is? That is the offense known as Vaishnava Aparad, offending the devotees. So avoid offending the devotees. Don't commit illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling, and constantly, 24 hours a day, constantly chant Hare Krishna, or if you can't chant 24 hours a day, at least chant for 23 hours a day, Hare Krishna mantra. If you can't do that, do it as much as possible, and service is also considered chanting. Prabhupada actually one time gave a lecture in India. He was saying, kirtan means... hearing is also kirtan. He said even taking prasadam is kirtan. He was talking about how the Goswamis were engaged in kirtan 24 hours a day. So he said that even taking prasadam is kirtan. But he said sleeping is not. So if you're sleeping in class, wake up. Because that's not kirtan. So if we're sleeping unnecessarily, then we have to wake up. You see? Because that means we're coming Godas instead of Goswami. We all have that, sometimes that tamagun comes in. We just got to, you know, help each other to fight it off. Something we all experience. Most of us at least have that problem. So we have to help each other. We see one of the Prabhus is nodding out, one of the ladies, whatever. The ladies should help the ladies, the men. In this way, men should help the men. We should wake each other up. Help each other stay alert. So anyway, desire as a concomitant factor of a living being. Desire is natural. You simply have to, on the root level of choosing which way you want your desires to go, you have to choose. And it will not be possible unless you actually have come in contact with the pure devotee. You see, and we've all contacted the pure devotee by reading from Prabhupada's books. We've all contacted the pure devotee. So, if you haven't contacted a pure devotee, you will just be a victim of desire. You'll be carried along on the waves of desire. But, by coming into contact with the pure devotee, you can revive that original pure desire to love God. So we're going way over time now. One last point.
By coming in contact with a pure devotee to the world, but if you are rebellious, how are you coming in contact with him?
If you're what?
Yeah, rebellious.
Rebellious. Oh yes, if one comes in contact with a pure devotee but doesn't become submissive to the pure devotee, wants to be rebellious towards the pure devotee, then, well, you're postponing, you know, you're prolonging your stay within this material world and postponing your release from this material world. So it's not a very intelligent thing. When you meet the pure devotee, you need to surrender. In my own life, I had an opportunity to meet Prabhupada in 1969. But I was in a rather rebellious mood at the time, to be quite honest. It's one of those countercultural, you know, rebels roaming around Berkeley with my guitar. But the devotee said, oh, Prabhupada's going to be here tonight. He's going to be... And he was actually just 5-minute walk from where I was living. But I didn't go. Why? Because Krishna wouldn't let me go. I was in a rebellious mood of not accepting any authority. We had a saying back in the 60s, don't trust anyone over 30. So, I was in a very rebellious, cocky mood. You see, I thought I was a real hotshot, you know, a campus minstrel, you know, singing Mr. Tambourine Man on campus, attracting huge crowds, you know. I thought I was a pretty rebellious minded fellow, so when Mukundlal Prabhu invited me to come, I didn't go. And then I hitchhiked back to Berkeley the next year in 70, and again the devotees invited me. Well, there's a big festival in Los Angeles. Prabhupada will be there. Just come on, we're driving down. You can just ride with us, no problem. No? Because I was rebellious. You see. But then Krishna smashed me. And I got to the point that I went back to Austin. I got smashed by the material nature. Very, very heavily, to where I was just begging Krishna to please liberate me. Please save me. Please guide me how I can be your perfect servant. And then when I became in the humble spirit, then I got my opportunity to meet Prabhupada and become his disciple. So that the rebellious mood is an impediment. We have to develop that mood of humble service, being willing to do whatever is necessary to please God, you see. Give up the rebellious mood. So we'll stop here. Kantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.